T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Have to just see the size. The way he carries himself on the ice for a 6'5" player is kind of unbelievable to watch. His skating gets a little bit knocked because he doesn't necessarily have the quick first 3 steps that people expect, but the way he's so powerful and the way he takes up the ice is really something to behold when you look at him. That's actually the area where he has the most to develop in his game, is learning how to use that size. I think he's always been one of the bigger players. He's been this size for at least the last couple years. So in junior hockey and even in the NCAA level, there's not a whole lot of guys that match up with him physically. So it hasn't been a tool that he's had to use to create an advantage because he's so much bigger than everybody else already. So I would say that's one of the biggest areas for growth in his game, is learning how to play that physical edge and learning how to use the fact that he is really big to create advantages for himself.
That is Bailey Johnson from Michigan Daily. She covered Owen Power at University of Michigan this past season, and talking about him on our show the other day. We are going to talk hockey. By the way, if you're just joining us, good morning. It's Thursday. It's looking like Don Granato for the Sabres coaching position.
Unless something changes, I think Darren Dreger reported he's the favorite as well. So, like, I think we're getting closer. Maybe a couple more weeks still, but signs pointing to Granato as the clear front runner, I think.
So we're here. We're getting your reaction, your thoughts on that. We'll get Marty's in a second. 803-0550 to join us, or 888-552-550. Man, we told him we'd try not to bug him in the offseason, but who am I kidding? We love having Marty on the show, and I missed him a lot. And I was going through, Marty withdrawal yesterday during the Instigators. So, Mr. Baron, it's your morning show friends, Howard and Jeremy. Good morning. How you doing?
Oh, like I said to you the other day, Howard, on a text, I love all of you guys, most all of you guys, so I'm happy to be on. So
yeah.
That's good. You too, I really love.
I know, it's Hamilton. You didn't give me the exact name, but I know the one guy here you don't really care for, he's got to be Hamilton.
You know what's so funny is that he's texted me and tweeted me the last few times that I'm on the Instigators, and he's like, Marty, I don't know what's wrong, but I agree with what you say. And so we laugh about it. It's been great. So, yeah, maybe it's the fact that life is slowly getting back to normal somehow that me and Paul agree on things.
We were just talking about Granato. Signs seem to be pointing towards that. Maybe in a couple of weeks. If it is, let's start there. What are your thoughts if Don Granato does get the job now?
Well, the one thing that Don Granato did with the Sabres is he made them look like a hockey team, right? For the last few years, and I know Ralph was trying his things, and he had his good points and his bad points, and Phil Housley, the same thing, but they did not look like a hockey team for the last 3.5-4 years. They looked like a team that was all over the place in the defensive zone, gave up point-blank chances night after night after night, and didn't have really structure going through the neutral zone in the offensive zone. So now Don Granato comes in as a head coach, takes him a week, 2 weeks, to kind of put his stamp on the team, but they look like a hockey team. They look like they knew how to defend. They look like passing was better. They had some transitional play. So, and he had I don't want to call it a less talented roster, but really he did. When you look at the start of the season for the Sabres with Jack Eichel, Taylor Hall, Eric Staal, I mean, there was a lot more talent early in the season, but they looked a lot better at the end of the season.
I don't want to use the term false positive because I don't think that's being a little too harsh. But when you judge Granado and what we saw in the last month or so, you know, Marty, the season was over. They were playing meaningless games. There was no pressure. He was at liberty to try, what the hell have I got to lose? Let me try anything I can to see if we can make this team better. If he does get the job, that changes. In October, there's pressure now. He's got to win. They're meaningful games at the start of the season. His neck's on the line. How much do you balance the results last year versus, there was really nothing on the line?
Well, I've been on teams like that, where at the end of the season, you're out of the playoffs, and basically you play a little bit more freely. But what happens is I look more at the players' performances than the team's performances. Like, what players stood out in a situation where they had nothing to lose, right? And is that sustainable? Would they be the same player next year? For Don Granato, as a coach, I look at different things. I don't just look at the win-loss record because it wasn't superb. Like, it wasn't like all of a sudden they were four games over 500 down the stretch. But how does the team play? So it's the same thing with a coach and a team and players. Which players can continue their progress after what they did at the end of the season, and which one is most likely going to be, that was just because, they were used in different situations without the stress and the pressure of it. So, you can take it whatever way it goes. Next year is really going to tell you if we should have believed in the Sabres or not when they performed better at the end of the season.
Marty, do you think if it turns out to be Granato, let me ask you this, do you think there could be an associate coach? I only bring it up because Darren Dreger, who is on regularly, of course, with the Instigators, mentioned the other day that they had interviewed Rickard Granberg from Sweden and threw out the concept of, is it possible he could be an associate coach if he doesn't get the head coaching job here?
I don't think so. And I only say that because usually an associate coach comes in, it's somebody that's had a lot of experience in the National Hockey League, and they're the associate coach to a big name, to somebody that has been around for a while. So that, to me, is not Don Granato. He's not a big name. He's not been around for a while. I think he wants to be the head coach and be that. You're the head coach, and then you have your assistant. You delegate. Really, associate coach, to me, is a title. It's a title that somebody's earned. It's a title maybe to get more money as an assistant, but we've seen most often happen where it's a big name. It's somebody that deserves to be paid a little bit more and have a little bit more recognition than just a simple assistant. And I say simple, it's not. Assistants are a big part of what the job that gets done. They work incredibly hard, but it's just a title thing. Hmm.
The goaltending, when we actually talk about the roster beyond the coach search and how to make the roster better and all the stuff, of course, Eichel's future, Reinhardt's future, expansion draft, what should the goaltending plan be? It has been somewhat of an issue for a while. What do you, one and the two guys here, what would your goaltending plan be for the Sabres?
I think Linus Ullmark deserves to be at least given an opportunity to negotiate a fair contract to be the number one goaltender with the Sabres. The only thing with Linus that is still on a question mark is his durability. He's been hurt a lot. Not his fault. Sometimes it just happens. But do you go into a season with a number one goaltender that you may sign for multiple years thinking there's a chance he could get hurt? I need to have somebody really good with him in case that happens. So that's the question mark with Linus Ullmark. But I think there's at least, in my opinion, should be a fair attempt by both sides to be making that deal happen. Now, after that, you can look around the league. There's going to be plenty of free agent. I think it's going to be a buyer's market when it comes to goaltenders. There's going to be way too many goalies and not too many chairs to sit on. There's going to be the trade aspect of it. Is Fleury going to be available? Are they going to make Fleury available again? I mean, I don't see why they would. He's been lights out all year. He's a Vezina Trophy candidate. This is incredible. They could be going to the conference finals tonight with Marc-Andre Fleury as their goaltender. So But he may be available. But again, you have to trade something to get something. So maybe the unrestricted free agent route is going to be better for the Sabres. There's going to be some big names on there. Peter Mrazek, which Carolina just lost, is probably going to be on there. Tuukka Rask is going to be on there. Freddie Anderson's going to be on there. If you need somebody for 2-3 years, I think there's definitely some names that you can shop on the free agent market.
Marty, the state of goaltending, or the guys that are left, you know, Carey Price, Vasilevsky, Varlamov, and then the winner of the Colorado-Vegas series, do you have any sort of takeaway of what this playoffs says about the position or the guys that are there?
You know, Jeremy, it's a copycat league, right? Like when the Antti Niemi and Michael Layton and Brian Boucher for the Flyers got to the finals, everybody was saying, "I have goaltending, you don't need the goaltending. It doesn't matter." This year, in the second round, 7 of the 8 goaltenders were either Vezina winners or Vezina candidates. So now you're like, oh, goaltending is big, right? So I personally always think that goaltending is a big part, is always going to be a big part of your success. But you can get value between $5 and $6.5 million to a number one goaltender and not have to pay $9-10 million like a Sergei Bobrovsky or Carey Price to be your goaltender. So that's the way I look at it. I think Varlamov has been really good for the Islanders, even though he struggled in the first round. But a lot of people said he was injured at the end of the season, and then he came in and played and didn't look himself. So he needed a little bit more of a break, but I thought the last few games against Boston, he's been lights out. Carey Price has been fantastic. Obviously, Vasilevsky is the best in the league. I don't care what people say. They may have their favorites other places. Vasilevsky is the best goaltender in the league. And when it comes to Fleury and Grubauer, they've been excellent as well. So I think goaltending is a big part. Once in a while, you get a year where it doesn't really matter. You can win with, you know, a rookie like Cam Ward or, you know, a goaltender like Antti Niemi with Chicago. But most often you need somebody that that's really good at that position.
And one thing about, you know, you're mentioning Vasilevsky. He's been there for a while. He's been through it. The Islanders are different in that they just keep kind of cycling through. The system they play, the way they play, is that a goaltender's dream? It's a dream to play in, but, of course, it's tough to stick in because they might decide that they can get somebody else to do it. They did it with Leonard and Thomas Greiss, and now here we are with Varlamov.
Yeah, or Sorokin. I mean, Varlamov is there, and he's doing great, but all of a sudden they could think, well, you know what, we don't need to spend that money. We have a guy that's cheaper in Sorokin, and he can get the job done the same way, like he did in the first round, right? So that's what you're going to get with the Islanders. It is a goaltender's dream. When I played for Jordan Tortorella with the New York Rangers, Henrik Lundqvist was the starter, and I was the backup, but the way Torts' defensive system was, made our job so much more easier. A lot of block shots, a lot of protecting the house. Sometimes we couldn't get out of the zone for 2 minutes, but there wasn't any good scoring chances. The only problem is you need to win games 2-1 or 3-2 because you're not going to score a ton of goals if you keep playing that very hunkered down defensive system. Right now, the Islanders, they've got some dynamic players, the Barzal, the Pajot, the Beauvillier, the Bailey. You know, Palmieri is doing great. So I think they're getting really, really solid production from those guys. But typically, they're only going to win 2-1 or 3-2, and that's the way they wanted to do it. So, you know, against Tampa, does that work? Yeah, it didn't work last year. I don't know if it's going to work this year again.
Marty, you mentioned, you know, copycat league in the goaltender discussion. I want to ask you about something Jeremy brought up earlier. As you know, sometimes when a team has success in the playoffs, especially if they win a cup, more so if they repeat, everybody will look at them and go, okay, yeah, let's do what they're doing. Let's either build the team that way or, you know, that's philosophically that style of approach to playing the game. And there are different looks, the Islanders being different than, say, Colorado. Do you think there is a team in the postseason where it is now the model to follow, so to speak? And if so, who?
Well, it's hard. I'll tell you this, because everybody right now in the postseason has got this unique look to their team. So let's start with like Tampa. Tampa, they're above and beyond everybody else, but they were able to put players like Stamkos and Kucherov on long-term IR this year. So right now they're really like a $95 to $100 million team when the cap is $81.5. But hey, you know what? They played it within the rules. It works. So nobody can build their team saying we're going to put, you know, $18 million on long-term IR. So you got to put Tampa aside. Colorado, you got to put them aside. They have Nathan MacKinnon making about half of what he should be making, right? And you've got Landeskog, same thing, on the expiring contract, making about half of what he should be making. So you say Colorado, they got lucky. They got, you know, Girard and Makar and those guys cheap too. So it doesn't work. You can't look at them. The Islanders, well, it's Lula Morello. He does some magical things year in, year out, and Barry Trotz is a coach. So that's that. And Montreal, I mean, who would have thought that Montreal came out of the North Division? I mean, Winnipeg, Toronto were a better team. Edmonton were a better team. Montreal somehow just seemed to have the perfect storm. So it's really hard this year to target a blueprint for what works in the National Hockey League. Every team has got this unique situation. I saw a tweet that said, out of the top 17 highest-paid players in the National Hockey League this year, only Carey Price survived the first round. Everybody else either didn't make the playoffs or got out of in the first round. The McDavids, the Draisaitl, the Matthews, the Marner. And maybe we'll see MacKinnon and Rantanen and those guys out tonight. Pasternak, Marchand, they're out. Like, it's so difficult to build a regular season team and then have a team that can be a playoff team, right? So that's if you have the recipe for that, good luck. Because you're not sharing it, and it's very hard to attain.
It is wild, Marty. You mentioned Carey Price there. We had the stat that he's the first $10 million player to win a playoff series that's not a qualifying series. No other player with a $10 million salary had a playoff series win until Carey Price did it. Now, you know, moving on into further rounds, it was going to happen in that series no matter what. It was Montreal versus Toronto. So that was from a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, of all these guys to get this money, it ends up being a goalie's the first one to get through.
Yeah, it's wild because usually I always think that, again, your goalies between 4 and 6.5 million, that's where you usually find the best value for your goaltender. I mean, if a 10.5 million goaltender, 10 plus million goaltender gets you a great season, he's at 920, 922, 925 save percentage. And you can get a $4 million guy, a $5 million guy that's going to give you 919, 920. So does that 5/1,000 of a, you know, really matter? No, it doesn't. You get good value in the 4 to 6.5 million range. And it goes up every year because the cap, well, not now, but the cap eventually will keep going up. But to spend over $10 million on a goaltender, I would have thought that the player making $10 or more million would have had a bigger impact than a goaltender at this point, and that's not the case, which proves me wrong once again.
I've got one more question for you about the playoffs, but I want to set it up by saying it is nice to hear your anti-Canadian bias coming out of your Quebec Nordique fan mouth. It's a two-parter. you know, honestly, I thought about you, Marty. I knew you were going to be on the show today. I knew Montreal's waiting to be a winner, and maybe it's Colorado. And I thought you tweeted out something about the Nordique, and I'm thinking, do you, if Montreal's playing Colorado, do you have a Nordique jersey from when you grew up as a fan of the team? Do you pop that on for that series?
I don't think I could put it on because I was like 4 years old when it was fitting. So, but I have a Buddy Cloutier, a Real Cloutier jersey. It actually is, and Real Cloutier played here in Buffalo. That was the Andre Savard trade and all of that, Tony McKechnie. But so, and everybody called Real Cloutier Buddy. It was, but it's not B-U-D-D-Y. It was B-O-D-Y. I don't know why. It's like body.
Yeah.
So maybe it's the French spelling, but I have a number 9 jersey that actually has Buddy as the nameplate when I was a kid. But my son, Jacob, got me for Christmas last year a Nordiques t-shirt and a Nordiques hat. So I'm definitely putting that on if Colorado is playing Montreal in the semifinal.
They should wear the throwback jerseys. What, as a hockey fan, okay, as a fan who's going to be watching the Stanley Cup Finals, for you, what would the most entertaining matchup be?
It would be, in my opinion, Colorado-Tampa in the Stanley Cup Finals. I think we are seeing pretty much the second most exciting matchup in the playoffs this year between Colorado and Vegas. The intensity, the speed. I sometimes I watch the game and I'm thinking, wait a second, are they doing a trick with the cameras? Like, is the camera moving because it makes the players look so fast? No, it's just that this series is faster, quicker transition, the scoring chances. It's those two teams are at the top of the league in that department, and then Tampa is right there too. So Vegas-Tampa would be great too, but I think Colorado-Tampa would probably be the premium matchup for me.
Yeah, Islanders-Montreal be a snooze fest, right?
Well, it'd be interesting, I'll tell you this, just because those would be two teams that, you know, in the way that the conferences are, usually would never meet in the finals. So that would be interesting, having such a close proximity kind of finals, but it wouldn't be the best hockey. I want to say Colorado or Vegas against Tampa would be where my money would be at.
Well, Mr. Braun, it's always nice having you on the show. We love you. We miss you. We hope you're having a nice summer.
I have one follow-up. We didn't talk F1 yet.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, we were going to mention that. Yeah, we got a road trip planned.
Do you have connections so when the F1 circuit does return to Montreal, we can go? Like, we'll have a team, you know, we'll just all go up and hang out and watch the race in Montreal.
Yes. I can try to make that happen.
Right.
I'm probably going to have to go through my brother because he's the one that has all the connection. But I've talked to PD and Rivs, and PD, like, Tuesday morning, you know, we got together like on the Zoom to do the instigator, and he goes, before we got the 9:55 before the instigator, he's like, oh my gosh, Marty, did you watch the race this weekend? I'm like, yeah. So we had like a 5-minute conversation on it. I felt so bad. I thought of you, Jeremy, when Verstappen is just like, you know, leaps and bounds ahead, and then the tire blew up. And he got lucky. He got lucky his car went to the right into the wall, because if it went left, he would have hit a wall straight on, and that would not have been good.
Yeah.
And he got lucky when Hamilton locked up and went out, or else, I mean, Hamilton doesn't get points. He could have won the race on the restart.
He didn't get locked up. He forgot to...
Well, he pretty did push the wrong button. That's right.
Button.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Which is unbelievable to think that, oh my goodness. Can you imagine? You work so hard, and Lewis Hamilton said, like, it's my bad. The team worked so hard, and we were in a position to win somehow, and I made a mistake. It's just, I can't believe Sergio Perez went by him. I can't believe there wasn't a crash when Hamilton went straight. But it's been interesting. But I'll tell you this: I like the normal courses way better than the city courses, because I like to be able to see the passing and all of that.
Yep.
So that's where I'm at this year.
Agreed. Yeah. But at least this was better than Monaco. Bored me to tears.
Oh,
at least there was some passing in this one.
Yeah, Monaco, I think I took a nap.
Hey, just so you know, if we're going to Montreal, you're also going to be our tour guide and translator.
Well, we're going to be eating poutine and smoked meat for a whole weekend, so you guys better be ready.
No Montreal Canadiens hot dogs or something like that? Aren't they famous for great hot dogs up there at the building anyway?
Quebec City had the better one.
Okay.
Again, here's my Quebec City bias. The Nordiques had way better hot dogs than Montreal.
Et le Colisée. All right. Hey, man, thanks for your time as always. Be good, sir.
You guys too. It's fun talking to you guys this morning.
Thank you, Marty.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.